Welcome to Management Matters, a National Academy of Public Administration podcast where policy meets practice. I'm Terry Girton, president of the Academy. On this episode, I'll discuss the social equity challenges facing city managers during the reopening after COVID-19 with my guest, Lee Feldman. Lee is a fellow of the Academy, and he's the city manager for Gainesville, Florida. Lee, I know that you've got a thousand things in front of you every day, so I'm so appreciative that you took the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Terry. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Well, I know you've spent your entire career in city management in Florida. So what are some of the unique governance challenges facing city government? But at the same time, what are some of the unique opportunities?
So Florida itself is very unique for government to operate, and we have a pretty extensive public meetings law, and we're trying to figure our way through that as we go through this whole pandemic response. So the governor, after a while, finally relaxed the law here to allow us to have our governing bodies meet virtually. There's a law in the books that says you have to have a physical presence for a quorum, but that got relaxed. So that in itself posed some very unique issues for us. How do you have public comment on items? How do you make sure that our neighbors that were able to come to City Hall to watch a meeting were able to watch on there? And then equity, started to play a factor too. How can you have a successfully virtual government when you have areas of your city that don't have broadband access? How can they stream the meetings? How can they know what's going on? How can they still participate in their government if they just don't have that basic resource? So I think we've looked around and we saw where some of the gaps are, and we're using this as an opportunity to try to figure out some of the ways that we can fill these gaps. If we can't fill them now, how do we fill them in the future?
Well, city managers are right there on the front lines of service delivery. Have you found that? Have you found a lot of public response during this pandemic? Are you getting a lot of public feedback and engagement?
I think we're getting a fair amount. We certainly hear when people think we're not doing the right things, but that's typical, right, of pre-pandemic and post-pandemic environments on there. I think we're struggling, how to continually operate government in a very engaged manner. So some of our efforts that we would like to undertake right now, we've sort of had to put on the back burner until we can get back into rooms with people. So that's been a little bit of a struggle. We're starting to see some of the issues at the national level, play out here. Gainesville is typically a very progressive city, so I would call it a very blue city in a county that is primarily considered to be red. And so we see a lot of the national politics playing out here, on issues like, should I wear a face covering or not? Should I, go to a place that's not practicing social distancing or not? Should city parks be open or not? So those are all playing out here. And that's provided a different challenge for us. On there, we're dedicated to doing the right thing, but clearly what the right thing is defined by different people.
Well, you raise a really important point, I think, about the intergovernmental response to the current crisis and how different constituencies have different ideas of what right looks like. So your comments around careful balancing of what your citizens and your community view as the right approach compared to what the state may be saying and how the state, in fact, may be different from the federal level. So you've got a lot of different constituencies to balance there in the city manager seat.
Well, you know, Terry, what's also fascinating is to see the level of intergovernmental coordination that does not exist. So the city gets its information from the federal government the way any member of the public does. We listen to the press conferences. We get our information from the state primarily through press conference. I think we've had a little bit better interaction with our county in terms of collaboration, but it's hard for governments to function at the local level when you're getting the information at the same time everybody else is, and you're not part of the decision-making process. So when the governor issues an order and says it's up for local government to enforce, and the order is going into effect in 9 hours, that's a lot of response that we have to gear up for.
Yeah, I can imagine that's got to be challenging, especially in times when your resources are so stretched and strained already in response to the crisis.
Well, and it's, you know, making sure that we're providing consistent messaging, right? It's all a matter of human behavior at the end of the day. And if the messaging is not consistent between the different levels of government, then the member of the public, our neighbors, are confused. Do I wear a mask? Do I not take a mask? Do I go for testing? Do I not go for testing? These are all, you know, issues that, that we're struggling with because we're at the bottom of the food chain, but we're the first level of government people see.
Right, right. Well, I know you've been just in Gainesville since last November. And as you came in with the city manager, you had you identified your top three priorities and you offered a 100-day plan. I'm sure COVID's had an impact on that, but let's start first with the plan. How did you identify those priorities and what are they?
So the priorities of the plan were to build a functional, a high-performing government model that was ultimately responsible to our neighbors and started addressing the issues that were of concern to them and the governing body of the city commission. Clearly the issues that are on the forefront here in Gainesville are, you know, addressing our poverty rate, making sure that we have equitable access to services, and that that we have a fiscal plan forward that is not, you know, going to create a system of haves and have-nots. So I came in with a 100-day plan, got pretty much there. We implemented some organizational changes, and within a couple of weeks, we went to a state of emergency. So the plan implementation is on hold. The organizational structure has been modified, but how we start approaching some of these projects have really been put on the back burner.
So Lee, when you came in with this plan and these sets of priorities, was it difficult to get buy-in? How did you go about building support for your agenda?
So I would say it's still difficult to get buy-in. Part of my approach is always to change the nomenclature of the organization to sort of center around the concept of the plan. And my plan was to start treating the people that live in the city differently. I've did this in my previous job in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm doing it here. So, for example, we often in government call people citizens or constituents or taxpayers or ratepayers and customers and all those terms that I absolutely hate, because that creates a transactional nature of government. And so I've started pushing the term here neighbor, and that we need to treat everybody as though they're our next door neighbor. And work with them in that regard. And so I don't talk about the public as the public or citizens or constituents. It's all neighbors. We provide neighbor services. We do neighbor surveys. We are doing neighbor engagement on there. And we do that as in one simple mission, and that simple mission is to build community. no matter what our jobs are here in the city. And so if our mission is to build community for our neighbors, then we are all community builders. And so I've been introducing that concept of changing the nomenclature to sort of get people to buy in, our community builders to buy into the plan. It's interesting. I've had rapid adoption by the City Commission of the word neighbors. And so that's been pleasing. You know that the governing body is buying into that concept as well. And so the plan will really get implemented when we all get onto the same page in terms of how we treat our neighbors and what our mission is. I've sort of been delayed in strategic planning efforts with the commission. That was going to be integral to getting the plan off the ground. But we're going to do a virtual strategic planning meeting in about 2 weeks over a 2-day period. So we will see how that goes. And then we will hit the ground running and build a budget and get the commission's top and high priorities set and get to work.
So you're going to tackle all of that in the middle of a pandemic.
No what? Time to get present, so.
I will be really interested to hear how a 2-day strategic planning session goes in a virtual environment. So we'll want best practices from that.
Yes. Yeah, I'm interested to see how it goes as well.
So, you know, in the military, we used to say no plan survives first contact with the enemy. So back to your plan, how has COVID changed it? It stretched some of your timelines out, but are there pieces of it that you had to go back and say, you know, that's just not going to work right now, or we need to take this in a different direction?
Candidly, I put the plan on the shelf. We're you know, COVID 24/7 on there. What I have been able to see is how the organization works when it's stressed, right? So, you know, going back into that, you know, military analogy, you know, when you're, you know, getting into battle, there's one thing about preparing, and then there's one thing to see how the unit does during a battle situation. And so it's been interesting to see how the organization has come together and responded favorably and positively to the challenges of COVID-19.
Well, I know you said dealing with poverty and addressing equity was a big part of your priority set. Certainly the pandemic has exposed kind of inequities nationwide that we had perhaps not paid as close attention to as we should have in the past. What are you seeing there in Gainesville, and what rises to the top in terms of the things that you want to address in the poverty and equity space?
So one of the things we're doing and I ought to preface this by saying we have a separate charter officer that is in charge of equal opportunity that spearheads our inclusion efforts as well as a lot of other efforts within the city. So that being said, our government, you know, needs to be very conscious of that. And with her, we've developed a equity series of questions that we ask and we were going to do this anyway, but this is a toolkit that's sort of centered around the GARE principles of addressing race and equity. So we've sort of refined that for the COVID-19 response. But it's certainly put a different lens on equity than I'm looking through these days. So, for example, testing of individuals. So testing is not something that's really under our control in a city. We have to work with the state health department to make that happen. But we're able to ultimately facilitate testing into our lower and moderate income neighborhoods by setting up testing sites, doing mobile. And one of the things that we're launching tomorrow, and this is actually, I'm pretty excited about this idea, but you remember when we were growing up and we had ice cream trucks, going up and down the neighborhood, we've been able to take one of our mini buses from our transportation system, and we will be staffing with paramedics, and we will be going through neighborhoods, literally like an ice cream truck did, doing testing, where people, regardless of whether our neighbors have symptoms or not. And so we'll be targeting the low to moderate income neighborhoods there. We've been able to put together a relief program geared towards our extremely low and low moderate income households, where we're providing rent and utility assistance to them. That program we call GNB Cares for Neighbors. And we did a corresponding program for businesses as well to give small businesses monetary grants to assist them. Again, targeting our areas that are primarily in the community development block grant census tracts. But, you know, we've seen some of the inequities that happen around some of our other governmental partners, like the school board, which has gone to a virtual classroom. And some of the things that you would not normally even think of. I mean, there are school districts that are handing out Chromebooks and so forth. But if you have three people living in a house and you have bad internet connection, Chromebook doesn't necessarily help on there. And if you're printing out assignments, the cost of ink is tremendous. And so if you're a household that is experiencing financial hardship during the pandemic, how do you afford the ink to print out the homework assignments on there? Not everything can be done virtually. So those are some of the gaps that we're seeing that I think we're going to have to work with our partners on filling. Maybe not, you know, not in time for this pandemic, and hopefully we don't have a pandemic in the future, but if we have to go to this type of situation in the future, or at least thinking about these types of equity type issues.
Well, there are a lot of challenges that clearly you as a city manager are dealing with. How are you thinking about the reopening decisions in your community? What are you taking into consideration? How do you balance the different notions about public safety versus economic impact? What's driving your decisions there?
So we're, again, being on the bottom end of the food chain in there. So the governor has a three-phase program, which is very similar to the president's three-phase program. All of Florida is now in phase one. The question is, what does that really mean? And so the governor said cities and counties can be more strict than his guidelines, but how do you determine what the right occupancy level should be for a retail business to open up? So we've been struggling with that issue. Big debate yesterday on whether people ought to be wearing face masks when they go into businesses, and protection of workers and protection of their fellow neighbors. So those are all things that are you know, constantly being debated every day. So we're doing things to help facilitate that, slowly opening our parks. We never closed our trails and our open space. We're looking at best practices on what we can open. How do we practice physical distancing without creating a socially distant experience? On there, we're helping restaurants by allowing them to expand into their parking lots to have more outdoor seating and take advantage of the great weather we have here in Gainesville right now in May and June. Candidly, not every business was excited about that. We were closing down some streets, and some businesses asked us to keep the streets open. They were more concerned about parking. So even when you're doing something that you think may be business positive, you will always have some negative reactions. We're experiencing what's been called mulchgate here, when we put down some mulch at a skate park to keep skateboarding from occurring until we could open the park safely. And people came out with shovels and shoveled the mulch away and carted it off and on there. And you would, but we learned some lessons and from that. And we've ultimately been able to open the skate park in a physically distanced, socially responsible way. But that was a classic example, I think, of political agendas getting into the middle of a bunch of kids who just wanted to use their skateboards.
Well, keeping all of those considerations in balance has got to be a full-time responsibility. But you mentioned earlier your strategic planning effort and moving towards building a budget. So I'm curious what you're seeing now at the city level. Clearly, the pandemic is imposing a lot of additional costs, even just to deal with the school and internet access issues that you mentioned, the public health issues. How are you thinking about building a budget for the future while you're managing the costs of the response? How do you balance investment opportunities and requirements with managing the day-to-day costs of taking care of your people?
So we've had to hit our emergency reserves. Hopefully a lot of this is ultimately reimbursed by the feds and the state. On there, we just don't know what will be reimbursed and when. On there, we're just going into next year's budget very conservatively. Luckily in Florida, cities are not a sales tax or income tax based environment. We have no income tax in Florida to begin with. Most of the sales tax is kept by the state, so we are property tax reliant. And our property tax values are locked in as of January 1st, so we won't see any impact going into this next year's budget, maybe the following budget. But we actually haven't even seen the real estate market take any sort of declines right now. For the most part, rents are being paid. Properties are continuing to be leased up. Now, Gainesville is a little bit unique because we are a university college town. And while the students did have to leave in March, we expect them back in the fall. The students expect to be back in the fall. The numbers I heard the other day from the university were dorms were leased up at 103%. Off housing, off-campus housing was at 92% versus same time this year was at 83%. So we see that the students will be returning. Their classroom experience may be a little bit different, which is going to put different pressures on the city. But I'm not planning any major financial distress on the city at this point. Not to say that that won't happen in a year or two, but going into the budget, we know we'll take some hit on revenue, but we're also going to take some decreases on our expenses as well.
Well, that's a promising outlook. We haven't heard the same optimism from other folks that we've talked to. So I think, you know, you may be fortunate there with the sales tax basis compared to some other communities across the country.
Yeah, I think we're lucky in that regard. And there's a couple other things that have been happening, you know, fuel prices bottoming out and our ability to look at hedging our fuel purchases for the next couple of years through purchases of fuel futures contracts. Will allow us to take advantage of this decrease in the market and lock in that. So that'll give us some relief for a couple of years.
Well, that's a great flexibility to have as well. I do want to shift topics a little bit and address a different question for you there in Florida. You know, last November, the Academy announced its 12 Grand Challenges in Public Administration. You and I have already talked about one of them, which was fostering social equity and the equity issues that you're dealing with, both in an ongoing nature and in the response to COVID more specifically. But another one that I think is really challenging there in Florida is building resilient communities. I think the pandemic is teaching us every day about community resilience. And there in Florida, you've certainly faced a variety of other kinds of challenges from natural disasters. How is thinking about the pandemic and resiliency the same or different as you might think about it in a hurricane cycle or some of the other challenges that Florida's faced?
So a few years ago, I participated in a group that did a study on resiliency. this maybe 8 or 9 years ago at this point. And what was interesting is how we really define the term resiliency. And, you know, we often think about it in terms of environmental resiliency, whether it's climate change issues or natural disasters and storms event. But what they pointed out, and I've always sort of kept in the back of my mind, is that there's a certain amount of, we also deal with it in terms of economic resiliency, right? And we're starting to see that here as well. But I think, you know, we're also need to pay attention to the concept of social resiliency, right? And I think this pandemic is going to really challenge how we adapt ourselves to social resiliency. I was on listening to a webinar earlier today. You know, is it when the handshake comes back? Is it when we're comfortable hugging other people in public? Is it when our public spaces are used again? It's, you know, when does that occur, and how can the city and the county and the state and our faith-based organizations and the other civic organizations all start addressing this concept of social resiliency? I'm certainly not, you know, one that professes to have any of the answers, but that's certainly going to be something I'm observing as we go through this.
Do you have any particular programs in place there in Gainesville to address resiliency, whether it's from natural disasters or economic resilience or the social aspects of resiliency? I mean, I think the way that you talk about using the term neighbor is one way to help people connect and feel connected. But what else are you doing there to think about how you build resilience for the future?
I'm not sure that, well, I mean, environmentally, we're doing all the best practices everybody else is doing in terms of, you know, managing floodplains and natural resources and things along the environmental standard on there. But the social resiliency, I think we're sort of feeling our way through this, doing everything from sing-alongs on streets to sing-along videos to, you know, messaging to, you know, encouraging people to be physically distant, but not socially distant on there. And you know, we're basically trying everything we can and see what sticks and what doesn't stick. And no idea is a bad idea.
Do you participate in any kind of forums with other city managers? Like what are the best resources that you found to help you navigate that position, both now and kind of in a more normal environment?
So actually a group of us have been starting to put together a college town, university town, city manager group on there. I used to participate in a group called the Large City Executive Forum when I was with Fort Lauderdale, where you had basically a common universe of interest around there, and managers would get together for a day and a half, 2 days to sort of talk about whatever's on their mind. So doing that virtually now, I chat with a lot of my fellow professional managers around the country and just talking about what's doing and reading a lot, reading about what everybody else is doing. Bloomberg has a great piece that comes out every day. Their weekly COVID-19 seminars have been pretty good. And just try and take the best ideas from everybody else. I mean, local government plagiarism is considered to be an adaptation of best practices.
So I know we said at the beginning of the conversation, you put your 100-day plan kind of on the shelf so that you could respond to the immediate issues there in Gainesville. But as you think about the next 100 days, what's really at the top of your priority list?
Figuring out how we reopen. How do we start that engagement process back up? What will that engagement process look like? Because even if we get the all clear, our neighbors are still going to have some fear about coming back? And what will that look like? How do you engage neighbors, especially those that don't have the virtual, abilities to engage? How do we effectively engage them? That's going to be the critical piece for me.
Well, Lee, I really appreciate you giving us the opportunity to sort of sit in your chair virtually today and get an appreciation for all the things you're dealing with there on the front lines as a city manager. I wish you all the best and stay well and healthy.
Thank you. Thank you. Look forward to all the great work the Academy is doing.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks.
For our listeners, check back every Monday for a new podcast from the Academy. We'll be talking to Academy Fellows each week about the challenges facing public administrators at every level of government as we try to make government work and work for all. Thanks for listening.